The Mysteries of Udolpho by Anne Radcliffe. Dramatized by Catherine Czerkawska. Part 2.
I, Emily Saint-Aubert, had found myself, after the death of my father, in the care of my aunt, Madame Cheron. For a while I had hoped, indeed had believed, that I was to be allowed to marry my dear Valancourt, who, I was sure, would have been my father's choice for me. But now the mysterious Signor Montoni had married my aunt, and had forbidden my own marriage, carrying both my aunt and myself with him to his native Italy. I did not trust him. And yet, here we were, my aunt and I, imprisoned behind the walls of the dreadful castle of Udolpho, to which he had brought us. On our first night in the castle, my aunt's maid, Annette, and I had become lost in a labyrinth of stairs and corridors while searching for my room. In a long, deserted chamber, we had come across a dreadful black veil, concealing who knew what abomination. But my courage had deserted me. I could not look upon whatever terrible secret it covered. And so we set off again to try to find our way through the castle.
Mistress! Is that you?
Oh, it is Caterina, the old manservant's wife. Come looking for us.
I thought you might be lost.
Indeed we are, Caterina.
If you follow me, I'll show you to your room, mademoiselle. This way.
Thank you.
The chamber that had been assigned to me was a large, lonely place, and so chilled through that I thought I would never be warm again. One of the casements overlooked a terrace, but the view beyond was all hid in darkness.
I will light you a fire, mademoiselle, and it will cheer you a little.
Yes.
Annette, I almost forgot. You're to go to your mistress. She's looking for you.
Then I'd better be gone.
As for you, my lady, the room will soon warm up a bit.
Thank you, Caterina.
And I'll come back later, if I may, and bring you something more to eat, for you hardly touched your supper.
When Caterina had gone, my thoughts turned to my beloved Valancourt. But he seemed so remote, so far from me, that the idea of him did little to comfort me. I was cheered, however, by Annette coming back with a little wine, some bread, and fresh fruit.
Did you ever hear tell of the strange accident that made the Signor Montoni lord of this castle?
What wonderful story do you have to tell me now?
It was Ludovico, mademoiselle. He told it me as we travelled together.
Ludovico?
Oh, you know, he's the Signor's servant that came with us from Venice.
I have seen him. He is very handsome, is he not?
He is. Anyway, you must know that the castle of Udolpho is very old.
So I can see for myself, Annette.
But it was not always the Signor's. It once belonged to the lady.
What lady?
Oh, I'm coming to that. Now, this lady lived here, and the Signor Montoni was her cousin. He used to visit her often and was very much in love with her and offered to marry her. But she loved another.
Alackaday.
Mm. Perhaps that is why he's so grim. Anyway, she would not have him. She was very melancholy and unhappy, and she used to walk about on the terrace beneath these very windows and cry and lament, fit to break your heart.
Do you hear anything? Nothing but the wind.
Well, this all happened a long time ago when Signor Montoni was a young man.
What was the lady's name?
Signora Laurentini. Oh, and she was very handsome, but spoiled and fond of having her own way in everything. Anyway, finding that he could make no headway with her, what does Signor Montoni do but leave the castle and never comes near it for a long time? She tells him she doesn't care, but she must have missed him, for she became even more melancholy when he was gone.
Be quick, Annette. The candle will be burned down before you are finished with the tale.
Well, one evening in autumn, she walked out of the castle into the woods below, as she often did, with only her maid for company. But this time, she strayed away from her maid. Night came, and she did not return. They searched for her all night long, but from that day to this, she has never been heard of again.
Is this true?
True as I sit here. So, the Signor laid claim to the castle as being the next heir in line, and has been the owner ever since. But they do say that her ghost walks the corridors and passages of the castle, lamenting and sobbing. And they do say that maybe it was Montoya.
Who's there?
It is I, Caterina. I brought you a lamp, my lady. Annette, your mistress wants you again.
You had better be gone, Annette.
Well, how can you bear to be alone? I'm sure I shouldn't sleep a wink.
I went to bed, leaving Caterina's lamp burning on the table. But its gloomy light was almost worse than being in the dark, for I fancied that I saw shapes flit past the curtains of the bed and glide into the far corners of the room. At last, I slept. But then the hollow sighings of the wind woke me. And taking up my lamp, I went to discover from whence came such a draught. There is a door here. I had taken it to be a cupboard, but it leads to a private staircase. Good God! There is no lock. I cannot even fasten it. Anyone might come upon me in the night.
Well, Emily, how do you like your new home?
It is very fine, is it not, Emily?
Sir, the castle is very fine indeed. But I wonder if I might have a different apartment.
And what is wrong with your present chamber, Emily?
It is very remote and far too large for my needs.
I have no time to attend to these idle whims.
And besides, there is a staircase which leads directly into my room. I know not where it comes from.
How does this happen, Signor? And would it not be better for my niece to have a room closer to my own?
Foolish girl. No one will go to the trouble of entering your room, Emily. The staircase is there simply for the purpose of allowing servants to enter and to tend to the fires. It need not worry you at all. Is that not right, my dear?
You see, Emily, there is no need to worry.
Then I will leave you and go for a walk along the terraces, if I may.
You are welcome to walk anywhere close by. Just so long as you do not leave the castle. The woods are the haunt of banditti and are not safe. But I must go too. I have business to attend to with Carlo. Carlo!
Good God, Emily. What kind of place has he brought us to? Had you no idea of the nature of Udolpho, madame?
None. I fancied a chateau of great richness and grandeur, and instead... Oh, Emily, what have I done?
Annette, will you come with me and look at what lies behind the black veil? The thought of it torments me.
Oh, mademoiselle, must we?
It surely cannot be so bad by daylight.
Perhaps not.
Let us go then, while Montoni is busy and my aunt is occupied with arranging her wardrobe.
Here we are. But I dare not lift the veil. Dare you?
I think so.
There, in the recess.
What on earth is it? Can it be a corpse? It is so ghastly pale, sir. I cannot bear to look more.
Let us go.
Let us leave this place. I wish that we could leave the castle altogether, Annette. What is this, Montoni? Is he a monster, a murderer? Good God, will I ever see my Valancourt again?
Mademoiselle?
Yes, Annette.
I'm looking for my mistress. Is the Signor with her?
He is, but I would not go to them if I were you. They are in dispute over some matter.
Then I will leave them be. They are arguing over Madame's property, I'll be bound. They always do. But, Mademoiselle, if you'll come with me, I have something to show you.
Oh?
A picture of the late owner of this place, the Lady Laurentini.
Oh.
Old Carlo told me it was a perfect likeness of her, and I thought you'd be curious to see it.
Go here, Mother. The Signor keeps it in a secure chamber for reasons of his own. Here it is. Wasn't she beautiful?
Her features are handsome and noble, full of strong expression, but there is no sweetness there at all.
No, it is not a sweet face, certainly.
It is full of passion and very beautiful in its way. How many years have passed since this lady disappeared?
20 years, so they tell me.
I think the Signor would do well to hang it in a better place than in this deserted chamber.
But he may have good reason for hiding her face. He
must... Hush, Annette. Not a word more. We must go back to my aunt. Montoni will have left her by now.
I am very worried about her. She seems to grow more unhappy with each day that passes.
Oh, Emily, I am the most wretched of women. I am cruelly treated. Who could have thought when I married such a man as the Signor that I should ever have to bewail my lot?
Who indeed?
Oh, Emily, Emily, he is so changed towards me. Sometimes he looks at me as though he hates me.
That cannot be true.
He has taken me from my country and my friends and shut me up in this old castle. Now he thinks he can compel me to do whatever he wants. But he shall find that he is mistaken. No threats can change my mind.
He has threatened you. Why?
Who would have believed that a man of his apparent wealth had absolutely no fortune? I thought he was a man of great property, or I am sure I should never have married him. Ungrateful, artful man.
Dear madame, the Signor may not be so rich as you had reason to expect, but surely he cannot be really poor, since this castle and the mansion at Venice are his.
Is it not enough that he had long ago gambled away his own fortune, that he has since lost what riches I brought him?
Has he?
But now he would compel me to sign away my settlement.
Has he?
But I will not sign, I tell you.
I knew nothing of all this.
He is ruined, sunk deep in debt, and neither this castle nor the mansion in Venice are his own.
I do not know what comfort to give you.
He has treated me with neglect and cruelty, Emily. But no power on earth will make me sign away my settlement.
Dear madame, will this attitude not provoke the harsh treatment you so dread?
I am past caring. I will not submit to such usage, I tell you.
I only mean that perhaps you should try to conciliate Signor Montoni, rather than irritate him.
Oh, I tell you, it is impossible. He is merciless. I hate him.
Signor Montoni.
Mademoiselle Saint-Aubert, please leave the room. I wish to speak with my wife in private.
No, you shall not go, Emily. You shall be my witness.
Emily! Leave the room.
Aunt, I must go.
Indeed, you must. Leave us, Emily. I will speak to you later. Now, madame.
I was sorry for my aunt, but I could not help her. We were both powerless against Montoni, who was filling the castle with strange soldiers, men who made sorties into the outlying mountains and came back laden with all manner of goods. It crossed my mind that in his straitened circumstances he had taken up banditry himself, and I feared for the safety of us all. I dreamed of Valancourt, but there was no word from him. The one bright light in my days was Annette, whose conversation cheered me and alarmed me in equal measure.
Oh, Mademoiselle Emily, when we set off, I little thought we'd be catched up in an old castle among dreary mountains with a fair chance of being murdered.
What do you mean?
Ludovico has told me of the Signor's cruel usage of his wife and his own odd goings-on. There are strange, ill-looking men in the castle. I tell you, we are all like to be murdered in our beds.
I too have seen the comings and goings, and I doubt not that the Signor is up to no good. But it is best not to speculate.
They say there are prisoners now, kept deep in the castle, and some of them are wearing uniform. It is very strange, to be sure.
We can only wait and see what befalls us. But I fear for my aunt most of all. What will become of her if she continues to resist him?
Enough of it. I'm weary of it. Madame, you shall instantly be removed to the east turret and imprisoned there.
Sir, you cannot do this thing. She is your wife.
But I do not love her. I have never loved her. I loved only one woman, and she... But out of the way, girl. Go to your room this instant, or you will be hurt too. Where is Carlo? Carlo!
Emily, no, no, do not leave me.
Carlo!
He will murder me. Do not leave me.
To your room this instant, Emily. And as for you, madame, you will be taken to the east turret until you come to your senses.
Are you sure she is up here, Annette?
It was what he said.
The place seems deserted.
Mademoiselle, look. By the light of the lamp.
Blood! There is blood on the stairs.
Go!
Come, Annette, hurry. We must go on. We must try to find her now.
I'm so scared, Mistress Emily. I cannot move.
It is coming.
Quickly. Into the shadow of this door.
Hush! Hush! He will hear.
My lady, did you see? It was
Montoni himself. We had better go back to my room, Annette. I am afraid for my aunt, but I will speak to him as soon as I can.
Do you do?
Yes. I think I must. I must be brave for my poor aunt's sake.
Speak to me, Carlo.
Yes? I would speak with you if you are at leisure.
I have little leisure these days, Emily. What do you wish to say to me? I have no time for trifling.
Sir, I can no longer remain at Udolpho with propriety. I must ask by what right you detain me here.
It is my will that you stay here.
While my aunt lived, my residence here was not improper. But now my stay will only distress me and cannot benefit you.
While she lived? But who has told you that Madame Montoni is dead?
I know it all too well.
Do you indeed? Emily, if you wish to see her, you may. She lies in the east turret. She is obstinate still, but she is not dead.
And I may see her.
Oh, for God's sake, go to her now if you must. I will ring for Carlo and he will show you the way. Now, leave me. I have a great deal of work to do.
This way, my lady. She is in here. I will wait by the door.
Thank you, Carlo. Aunt?
Emily! Is that you?
Thank God!
And Annette!
We thought he had murdered you!
He will do it yet.
Oh, where have you been so long?
Mademoiselle Emily, is she alive or is it some terrible apparition?
Shush. She is in a fever. Oh, my dearest aunt, your hands are so cold, but your forehead is burning.
I am like to die.
We came here a few nights ago and saw blood on the stairs.
He ordered his men to carry me here. One of them had an unbound wound and he bled as he moved, for he complained about
it. We thought, dear God, we thought he had...
Ah, mm-hmm. Here you are, Emily.
Signor Montoni, my aunt is dying. Let her be removed to her own apartment directly. She must be made more comfortable.
Of what use will that be if she is dying?
Oh, do not harden your heart against me. Let me appeal to your conscience, if you have any, as you are a gentleman, if you have ever known sorrow.
Very well. Very well. Take her back to her apartment. I cannot bear the sight of her.
Having seen to my aunt's comfort as best I could, I left her in Annette's tender care and returned to my own room where I slept the sleep of exhaustion. But in the night, I awoke to a sense of my own loneliness. My aunt was surely dying, and soon I would have no protector left in the world. I stood at the window, weeping in the cool night air. Who's there? That sigh was surely human. Who's there?
Mademoiselle, did you call me?
Guard, did you see anybody on the terrace just now?
I saw a shadowy figure, mademoiselle, but I have seen often before.
You have?
Aye, and I will not pursue it, for the men believe this terrace to be haunted.
Haunted?
Aye, a tall figure walks here, but though we have shouted and pursued, we can never catch him.
And have you seen this figure, sir?
I have. A week ago. I cannot tell what it was or what I saw or how it vanished. It was the devil himself, I'll be bound.
Where?
On the terrace here. I would keep indoors if I were you, lest this devil should carry you off. But I must go back to my post. The storm is coming. Good night, my lady.
Good night, sir. And the Holy Mother guard you.
Aye. Would that she might, gentle lady. And you too!
Oh, mistress, you must come. You must come quickly. Your aunt is dying. Stay. I will bring my candle.
I wonder that she does not seem to be afraid of the thunder.
I went over to the bed to speak to her, and she seemed to be asleep, but presently I heard a strange noise and saw that her breathing was laboured. Then there was silence.
I fear it is all over, Colette. She has passed away. We must send for her husband.
I am here already. So, she is dead at last. And she still has not signed her property away to me.
No, sir. She has not.
But it matters little. For as her husband, I am heir to all she possessed. The estate she refused me in her lifetime can no longer be withheld from me now.
Forgive me, sir, but I think you are wrong. I think they are mine.
Yours? A foolish assertion. You should have more sense than to provoke me.
I speak only the truth.
I cannot believe that you will oppose where you cannot conquer. If you will resign the property to me, I will give you a safe conveyance to France. If not, you must remain my prisoner.
The law gives me the estates, and my own hand shall never betray my rights to them.
You speak like a heroine. Let us see whether you can suffer like one. Go to your room, Emily.
And so I returned to my solitary chamber, and there I stayed for many a long day, with occasional sorties onto the terrace or down to the great hall of the castle, when my uncle and the rough soldiery he kept about him were absent. Often I was heartened to hear soft singing from some window of the castle below mine, and the song seemed familiar. It reminded me of my home. Montoni visited me only to bully or cajole, but I would sign nothing.
Oh, Mistress Emily, why will you not sign? What does it matter? If only he will let us go.
But how can I let La Vallée go to him to be sold to pay his debts? Besides, there is Monsieur Valancourt, of whom you know.
Ah, yes, Valancourt.
He has little fortune of his own. But at La Vallée, we could be happy together. How can I sign my beloved home away to Montoni? How can I?
Then what shall we do?
We can only look for help from another source.
But what source?
Annette, it seems to me that there are many prisoners in the castle just now.
Oh, why, yes. Only the other day, my Ludovico was telling me all about them.
Ludovico sees the prisoners?
Oh, sometimes. The castle is full of rogues, but in the dungeons below, there are some gallant prisoners, soldiers and noblemen, and some of them are even from France.
Aye, I know that. I have heard the soldiers speak of a ghost.
The place is full of ghosts.
No, I do not think that this is a ghost. I think it is a living man. He sings the songs of Gascony. I sometimes wonder...
What, mademoiselle?
I sometimes wonder if it might not be my Valancourt himself. After all, he might have been sent to fight here. Or indeed, he might have come looking for me and been captured.
Oh, that is very true. I have not thought of it.
Do you think your Ludovico might be able to find out?
Oh, he could try.
Annette, will you sit up with me tonight and listen for the singing? I may be mistaken. Will you tell me what you hear?
Indeed I will, with all my heart.
There! Do you hear it?
I do. It must surely be Monsieur Valancourt.
But you have never heard him sing before.
No, that is true.
You have a good heart, Annette. But I must speak to this man.
How dare you, mademoiselle?
Are there any soldiers about?
No, I see none.
Who is there? Who is it that sings at this late hour?
My lady, I am here.
Do you hear that?
It must be your Valancourt. I am sure it is he.
I am not so certain as you, Annette, but I would like to know more. Speak to your Ludovico for me. See what he can find out about this prisoner.
Mademoiselle?
Ludovico, come in. Annette tells me you have news for me.
I've been speaking to the prisoner. He would not tell me his name, Signora. But when I mentioned yours, he seemed overwhelmed with joy.
Oh, it must be Monsieur Valancourt, mademoiselle. Indeed it must.
But the Chevalier says he knows you. He was in an ecstasy of joy at the mention of your name.
How does he look? Is he not melancholy and ill?
I saw no symptoms of that, lady. He seemed in good spirits, and he asked me to contrive an interview with you. He has paid the guard a great deal and can pay more. I think it's possible that a meeting could be arranged.
Then tell him I am agreeable, and tell him that my heart is unchanged. I am longing to see him again. Ludovico arranged a midnight meeting more easily than I would have thought possible.
There was small loyalty to Montoni in the castle of Udolpho, for he was too cruel a master. The best place was deemed to be the corridor near my room, and so it was arranged. At length, the clock struck 12. I heard steps in the corridor and saw a figure fast approaching.
My lady. Oh, my dear lady.
Monsieur Valentin? Oh, no. No. It is not he. It is not he.
He's fainted. And you. You impostor. You're not Valancourt. Help me carry her into her room. Come on. Come on, then.
Valancourt? Who is this Valancourt? Emily. Oh. Emily. Oh, look to her. She is coming to herself.
Monsieur, why would you not give your name?
Mademoiselle, will you permit me to apologize for the pain I have caused you and to explain to you the circumstance which has led me into this fearful error? I am your countryman. Dupont is my name.
Dupont?
I came into Italy in the service of my country. In a skirmish among the mountains, our party was routed by Montoni, and I was taken prisoner.
I see.
I knew that your aunt had married an Italian of that name, and that you had accompanied them both into Italy. I learned that you, Mademoiselle Emily, were under the same roof as myself, and a prisoner likewise, though locked in no dark dungeon.
You are a stranger to me.
But you, Mademoiselle, are no stranger to me. I am of Gascony, and have long admired, nay, have long loved you. Why should I disguise it?
But who are you, sir?
My family is probably not unknown to you. We live within a few miles of La Vallée. I have heard your sad story from Ludovico.
You have?
Perhaps then you will accept the services I have to offer. There must be some means of escape, and we will take any opportunity we can.
Any opportunity, eh? I will teach you. I will teach you to betray the Signor.
A knife! Sir, look to yourself. He has a knife.
Take that! Oh, no, you don't!
Dupont, he is unconscious, maybe dead.
You must fly.
How can I leave you alone and unprotected?
Somebody is coming up the private staircase.
I will not leave you.
Oh, it must be Montoni's men. They are coming. They will kill you for sure.
No, it is only Ludovico.
Follow me. As you value your lives, follow me. All of you. You've not an instant to lose.
Emily, Annette, come, quickly.
Downstairs. My foot is very uneven.
Where are we going?
To the gates. They were open a moment since to a party just come in from the mountains. Take care, Signora.
Take my arm, Mademoiselle Emily. Ludovico, look to Annette. It is our only hope of escape. Careful now. Careful!
No one stopped us. Ludovico seized two horses, and we passed the terrible gates of Udolpho with all speed. Myself, my most unexpected saviour, Monsieur Dupont, Annette and Ludovico. Reaching the safety of the woods, we continued on our journey as fast as the broken road and the feeble moonlight would allow.
This poor beast. This horse is weary enough. He's ridden all day and now he must ride all night.
I hope we shall meet with no straggling band of banditti. But I have a good stiletto at any rate.
And I have the gun that was slung to the saddle of this beast. We shall do well enough.
Holy Peter, we have no money. What shall we do? For by hook or by crook, we must make our way to the coast and take ship for France.
How can we do that without money?
Wait. There is a bag slung below the saddle of our horse.
Oh. That must be the booty of one of the rogues employed by Montoni.
And here is gold enough to take us to France. Oh. Fortune smiles on us this night.
Fortune continued to smile. We rode until morning and rested at an inn, ever in fear of pursuit. But we were not followed, and after a long and tiring journey, we came at last in sight of the Mediterranean, the sea that would transport me back to my home and to the arms of my beloved Valancourt. We decided to interrupt our homeward journey by a visit to the convent where my father was buried. I wished to pay my respects at his grave one more time. We were surprised to discover that the once deserted chateau was now inhabited. The Count de Villefort had inherited it on the death of his cousin, the Marquis de Villois. While I was imprisoned at Udolpho, he had come there with his wife and his daughter Blanche, a girl of about my own age.
The Count de Villefort is an old acquaintance of my father. Emily, I think you'll be more comfortable lodged at the chateau than here in the convent.
But surely we cannot impose upon them.
I will go and pay my respects to the Count and his lady. You may be sure that an invitation will be forthcoming.
But I have a great desire to spend some time here, in my father's last resting place.
Emily, you are very weary from the journey and from the terrors that preceded it. A restful time spent in the comfort of the chateau would do you no harm. You can come back to the convent later.
Very well. Then perhaps you will speak to the Count on my behalf?
Of course.
The Count de Villefort proved to be very hospitable. His lady was gracious, and his daughter Blanche was unaffectedly kind. Gradually, in their company, my spirits revived. The Count was so good as to make inquiries for me concerning my inheritance. It seemed that the period for which my beloved Lavallée had been let was nearing its expiry, and soon I should be free to return home. Of Montoni, nothing had been heard. But my aunt's property would soon be mine, and I would then be in possession of a freedom and financial independence which I had never before known. I therefore wrote to Valancourt, telling him of my changed situation.
Emily, would you take a little walk with me? The woods are very beautiful today.
They are indeed, Blanche.
I'm so glad we came here, and so pleased to have made friends with you.
And I with you.
But why do you sigh and seem so sad?
The last time I was in these woods, my dear father was alive.
Oh, yes. I had forgotten.
There are the towers of the convent where he lies buried. I will go there again, before I return home to Lavallée.
I have just left a convent.
Have you?
Yes. I was educated in one. I feel such pleasure in my liberty that I cannot understand your wish to go into one, Emily.
But I do not mean to go into the convent for life, Blanche.
Oh, I should hope not. I should hope you mean to marry. Monsieur Dupont seems very fond of you.
He is. But I am afraid it is not that way my affections lie.
Is it not?
There's another young man.
Another young man?
Monsieur Dupont has been very kind, and I hope he will always be my friend. But he does not have my heart.
And does he know this?
He knows it well. And I'm sure it saddens him. But he will recover. Blanche, he is barely acquainted with me.
Oh, that is true.
And I can think of another person who might win his affections, if she chose.
Can you? Oh, I hope so. I do hope so.
Tell me, Blanche, is the eerie singing still heard in the forest hereabout?
Indeed it is. I have not heard it, but the old housekeeper, Dorothée, has. You should speak to her about it.
Perhaps I will.
Let us go and ask her, for I am as interested as you are. She will be in her room now.
Yes, mademoiselle, the singing is still heard, though the singer has never been found out. Who can pursue a spirit?
And how long have you heard this music?
Ever since the death of my dear mistress. Oh, young ladies, I could tell you such things.
Do pray tell them, then.
You've never heard, I suppose, what made us leave the chateau and go and live in the cottage.
Never.
Nor the reason that the Marquis, the former owner, left the place so hurriedly.
It was said in the family that he took a sudden aversion to the house, but then I understand he was a man of strange, intense passions. I am lately come from a place of terrors and wonders, but I have heard almost all of them explained.
Dorothée, there is a suite of rooms which you never will open to us. Why not?
They are my lady's rooms, Mademoiselle Blanche. I myself have never set foot in them since the Marchioness died so unexpectedly.
So the Marchioness died very suddenly?
Very. Oh, I remember her as if it were yesterday. And you know, my dear Mademoiselle Emily, you sometimes bring her to my mind.
I do.
You have a great look of her. I can remember when she first came to the chateau. She looked just as young and blooming. But then, on her deathbed, oh, how she was changed.
What happened to her?
No. I have said enough. I must be about my work. And you two young ladies must go and dress for dinner.
A few days later, I was seated at a table in my room writing letters when Dorothée entered on some household business and chanced to catch sight of the little miniature of the lady which had been in my father's possession and which I had carried with me ever since.
Holy Mary! What is this?
What is wrong, Dorothée?
It is a very sylph.
Oh,
where did you find it, lady? It is my blessed mistress herself.
But it was among my father's papers. I did not know who she was, save that my father was very fond of her and greatly saddened by her death.
It is her to the very life. How did your father come by that picture?
I do not know, but perhaps if he told me more.
There is some great mystery here that must be solved. We will go to her apartments. There is a larger portrait there, and I can show you. But not now. The day is fine, and you need air and exercise. Get you into the gardens, my lady.
Emily? Emily? Can it really be you?
Oh, Valancourt. My dear, dear Valancourt.
I've been in Paris. Your letter was forwarded to me there, and I immediately set out to see you.
All will be well now that you are here. La Vallée is mine. I have escaped from the tyranny of Montoni. And your hand is in mine. My happiness is complete.
I am unworthy of you, Emily. I can hardly bear to look at you in all your dear innocence.
What is the meaning of this?
Let us talk on other subjects. Do you remember our journey together?
Can I forget it? That was the happiest period of my life, when I had all about me that I loved.
And mine too. For then your father's confidence in me was not misplaced.
You make me very uneasy.
I shall explain.
Look, here comes Blanche, the Count's daughter. And Monsieur Dupont is with her. I told you in my letter he helped rescue me from the terrors of Rodolfo.
It should have been me, Emily. I should have rescued you.
Come and meet him. You will like him, I'm sure. And Blanche is a dear, sweet girl.
Valancourt soon withdrew to the inn where he was spending the night. The next day, the Count accompanied me on my morning walk in the gardens. An unusual thing for him.
Emily, may I ask how long you have known Monsieur Valancourt?
He was very helpful to my father and myself on our last journey together. His family was known to my father, and he approved of the connection.
Ah, I see.
Do you know him?
He was introduced to me in Paris. I was much pleased with him on our first acquaintance.
And after?
I cannot but perceive that he admires you, and that the feeling is reciprocated.
Sir, if you have anything to tell me concerning him, please do.
I think him not worthy of your favor.
I am alarmed by what you say.
Emily, the Chevalier Valancourt and my son Henri were introduced to one another in Paris. But then I discovered that this young Valancourt had formed an acquaintance with a set of men who were... Well, in short, they were a disgrace to their species. They lived by plunder and passed their lives in continual debauchery.
Debauchery? I cannot believe it of him.
Let us leave the subject for now.
No, no. You must continue. The Chevalier doubtless had enemies who misrepresented him to you.
I should be most happy to believe so. But nothing short of conviction could have urged me to repeat these unpleasant reports.
What must I do? Good God, what must I do? How can I believe such evil of him?
I think you must speak to the young man yourself. I suspect that he will not be able to lie to you. I fear that his morals are corrupted. But here he comes. I believe you. Ask him to tell you the truth.
Emily? Emily! What has thus disordered you? And why does the Count hurry away?
Valancourt, you must leave this place. I fear we must part forever.
Emily, tell me what is wrong.
I have heard... I have been told... such things.
You do still love me, then? Yes, you are still my own, Emily. Let me believe those tears that tell me so.
I weep for you. But I have to ask you whether you are the same Valancourt whom I once loved.
I am the very same. But no, I am no longer quite so worthy of you.
Then if what I have heard of you in Paris is true, we must part. This must be our last meeting.
The Count has done this.
I think rather that you have done this yourself. Oh, Valancourt, all this time I have kept faith with you. Could you not have kept faith with me?
But I have. Only that I am fallen from my own esteem a little. But if you still love me, how could you spurn me in this fashion?
How can I trust my life to you?
It is true that I am involved in debts. I was a foolish young man and fell in with bad company.
You must leave me.
I will go. If that is what you wish, I will go. And never come back again.
That night, Dorothée came to my door to lead me to the apartments previously inhabited by the Marchioness.
Here we are. Oh, I wonder what makes my old limbs shake so.
How cold this room is.
Oh, my lady. Oh, I well remember how she looked when first she came here as a young bride. And how happy my lord the Marquis seemed. But she did not seem happy.
Not happy?
It seems that her father had commanded her to marry the Marquis, although her heart and fancy lay with another young nobleman. I think she fretted for the loss of him, and perhaps the Marquis himself was aware of it, though she tried to conceal it from him.
But he found it out.
My lord grew gloomy and fretful, and was very harsh with her. When she was alone, she used to cry, and I would listen to her. But I could not comfort her.
And she died young?
Only a year after she arrived here. She was taken ill, and I thought her fretting had made her so. But alas, I fear it was worse than that.
How can that be possible?
Hush. Do you hear something?
I hear. Yes. I hear sweet singing outside.
Oh, it is the sound of a ghost, to be sure.
It comes from the woods in the direction of the convent there.
It is fading away. And gone.
But you were telling me about the Marchioness's illness.
Yes. Yes. The Marquis became more gloomy, and my lady grew worse, till one night she was taken very ill indeed. When I came to her bedside, I was shocked to see her countenance. My lady told me she felt herself to be dying, and I sent for the Marquis. He wished to speak with her alone, and so I left the room. God forgive me.
Oh, Dorothée.
When I returned, my lord seemed to be trying to make light of her disorder, but she was seized with such terrible pains. Oh, her shrieks, they ring in my ears still.
And she died?
She died in my arms. In this very room. But my lord would not stay, and went into his library, where his man told me he flung himself to the floor and would hear no reason for many hours together.
But was no doctor sent for?
He came too late. Soon after death, a frightful blackness had spread over her face. Strange reports began to circulate among the servants, and poison. The dreadful word poison was whispered.
They thought she was poisoned. But by whom?
By her husband, to be sure. Though there was no one who dared to accuse him. She was buried in the church of the convent where your own dear father rests. My lord the Marquis went away soon after. I never saw anyone so smitten with melancholy. And no one has lived here from that day until now.
And this is her room.
Here is her bed. The bed upon which she died.
Good God.
Nothing has been altered since. But if you will take the candle and look in the oriel, you will see a portrait of the lady.
Why, yes, you are right. It is very like the miniature which my father treasured.
Mademoiselle, she is the very image of you.
Let us go. I cannot bear the melancholy of this place longer. The air of these rooms is unwholesome. Oh, Dorothée, let us go.
I was grief-stricken by my meeting with Valancourt, who had left the vicinity of the chateau. And I was made very uneasy by Dorothée's tales of the dead marchioness and her close resemblance to myself. Meanwhile, news had come of the death of Montoni in one of his skirmishes. He had lived by the sword and perished by its means. So now there were no obstacles at all to my going home. At first, I thought I would spend a little time in the convent. There I learnt that Sister Agnes, the nun who had befriended me during my last visit, was sick unto death.
Emily, there is something in her past that troubles her conscience deeply. When she first took her vows, I was not at the convent, but they told me she was a very beautiful woman.
I have sometimes fancied...
Yes?
...that I have seen her face somewhere before. And not long ago, either.
Oh, how could that be? You've been at the castle of Rodolfo these many months.
I know, and it mystifies me. How long has she been here?
She came here at about the time that the Marchioness de Villeroy expired.
Did she?
And now she herself is dying. Her latter days have been exemplary, but still her conscience troubles her.
Can I see her?
Yes. In her lucid moments, she knows that you are here, and she has expressed a wish to see you. Let us go to her cell. Sister Agnes, here is Emily Saint-Aubert come to see you.
Emily Saint-Aubert. Saint-Aubert. But surely... Oh, my sweet lord. The vision comes upon me in my dying heart.
She's upset. I should go.
No, no. You must stay with me. What would you have? Retribution. It is yours already. How many years have passed since last I saw you?
Oh, she is delirious. Humour her.
My crime is but as yesterday. Yet I am grown old beneath the weight of it. Why, you are still young and beautiful. Oh, the deed is done. The deed is done.
Madame, please, calm yourself. I am not come to you for retribution.
What are years of prayer and repentance? They cannot wash out the foulness of murder. But you, why do you look so piteously on me and smile too? How can I bear it?
Look, the delirium is going on. She will revive a little presently.
Where have I been? Have I been dreaming again?
You are better now.
I will never be better again, but you, girl, are you not the daughter of the Marchioness?
Do you speak of the Marchioness de Villeroy?
You are the very image of her when she was young and when I too... Sister, open the casket. There is a miniature inside. Give it to me that I may look upon my youthful face one more time.
Here, Sister Agnes.
Look, that was my young self before sin ravaged these poor features.
I have seen this face before. Is this really you?
It was once deemed a striking likeness of me.
I have seen your portrait.
Where?
In the dreadful castle of Udolpho.
Udolpho in Italy? Oh, it is many a long year since I have heard that name. Oh, alas. Alas. What scenes of pleasure and of horror does the mention of it revive in my fancy?
I know that. The veil. The terrible veil.
Oh, word! Thou come from the grave to reproach me? Murder! Foul! Foul!
he did not recover. A few days later, her will was opened, and it was found that she had bequeathed her personal property to the nearest surviving relative of the Marchioness de Villois. And I was that person! The abbess knew the whole story, and now that Agnes was dead, she was free to speak.
You must have guessed some of it, Emily.
A little.
In the world, Sister Agnes was known as Laurentini of Udolpho. Beautiful, passionate. Montoni was her cousin and loved her deeply, but she had eyes for only another, a Frenchman, the Marquis de Villeroy. He courted her and loved her with equal passion, but before they could be married, he heard that about her reputation which disturbed him greatly. I am sorry to say that he made her his mistress, with no intention of making her his wife.
The poor lady.
At last he left Udolpho and returned to France, where he was betrothed to a woman of rank, a good and faithful woman, whose affections lay elsewhere, but who was obedient to her family and married him. She was... Oh, my dear. She was your aunt.
The Marchioness. The Marchioness de Villeroy was my aunt.
She was your dear father's sister.
He never told me. I thought Madame Chiron was his only sister.
I think he could not bear to speak of her. You see, Laurentini heard of the attachment, and her mind became disordered. Still courted by Montoni, who I believe really loved her, she spurned him, and at last disappeared from Udolpho.
They all thought Montoni had killed her. I saw there was a dreadful body behind a black veil.
I know of that veil and what lies behind it. It is but a wax figure, a memento mori, a reminder of death and repentance.
It's very lifelike. I thought... Oh, and so Montoni did not kill her?
No, no. She came here to this convent instead. But her life was hateful to her. Her passion ate away her reason. Still, the Marquis was not proof against her beauty, and as soon as he saw her again, the affair between them was resumed.
My poor aunt.
Yes, she had sacrificed herself for nothing. Oh, I don't doubt that the Marquis had a calm and reasonable affection for his wife at first, but Laurentini inspired something more. Something worse.
Do not tell me.
Aye, it is true. Laurentini dripped the venom of jealousy in his ear until in a frantic rage of wounded honor he consented to destroy his own wife. A slow poison was administered, and your aunt fell a victim to Laurentini and to the guilty weakness of her husband.
They poisoned her.
They did. But the moment of Laurentini's triumph was also the start of her suffering. The Marquis was instantly overcome with remorse. He quitted the chateau and Laurentini came to us. She changed her name to Sister Agnes and has lived with us in prayer and contemplation ever since.
What a tale of woe.
She has not spent a peaceful hour from that day to this.
Poor Laurentini. No wonder my father was so sad to see this place. It must have brought the memory of my aunt so clearly to his mind.
Yes, indeed. But now he rests in peace. They all do. And I think, my dear, that it is time you left your friends at the chateau and returned to La Vallée.
I was preparing for my journey back to Gascony when I had two unexpected visitors at the convent. The Count and, much to my surprise, Monsieur Valancourt.
Emily!
Sir, you promised never to return.
Emily! Let Monsieur Valancourt speak.
But you yourself warned me.
Emily, I wondered that your father could have been so mistaken in this young man's character, and so I made my own inquiries.
My conduct had been cruelly misrepresented. I had been rash. I had gambled and lost money. But debauchery and theft, no. Never.
Then what did befall you, Valancourt?
I'm ashamed to say that I fell into such debt that I was cast into prison, where I had leisure to reflect upon my foolish conduct. I made a solemn vow never to yield again to the fascination of gaming. But I robbed nobody and was faithful only to you. When I denounced my gambling friends, they spread rumors about me which came to the ears of...
Of myself and my son.
It was all my own fault. If you run with wolves, you must expect to be treated as such.
Is this true?
It is, Emily. Valancourt is now reconciled with his family. And since you are a young lady of sense and independence, why, I think you can safely be left in the care of each other.
And so we reach the end of this tale of terror. Valancourt and I were married. We return to La Vallée to find faithful Teresa still living in a little cottage which my dearest Valancourt had found for her there. Annette and Ludovico were installed as housekeeper and steward at my aunt's estate in Toulouse, but my husband and I preferred the pleasant shades of La Vallée, and soon those shades were populated by our growing family. Dear listener, I hope it may be useful to have shown that though the vicious can sometimes pour affliction on the good, their power is transient and their punishment certain, and that innocence, though oppressed by injustice, shall finally triumph over misfortune. Remember, then, the mysteries of Udolpho.
In the final part of The Mysteries of Udolpho by Anne Radcliffe, dramatized by Catherine Czerkowska, Emily was played by Deborah Berlin. Robert Glenister was Valancourt, Keith Drinkle, Montoni, Tina Gray, Madame Montoni, Rachel Atkins, Annette, Jill Graham, the Abbess, Shirley Dixon, Sister Agnes, Dennis Hawthorne, the Count de Villefort, and Anne Beach, Dorothée and Katerina. Julian Parkin was Monsieur Dupont, Colleen Prendergast, Blanche, Chris Pavlo, Ludovico, Mark Bonner, the Castle Guard, and Stephen Thorne, Carlo. The Mysteries of Udolpho was directed by David Blount.